December 10, 2015, it's the Watt from Pedro Show. From Pedro Show. Hey, Brother Matt, how you doing?
Good. How's it?
Well, I just got back from the 30-year birthday of Dinosaur and 50-year birthday of Jay Maskus.
Just a long day.
Ballroom doing Funhouse and TVI for Brother Steve McKay and the Ashton Brothers.
Bitching.
Why aren't we there? We should be at the Bowery.
Yeah.
It's our guest, Brother Matt.
We got a special guest.
Gave it away. Gave
Sorry.
It away. First, let me tell you, we started with Countdown, John Coltrane, and then OIJV from Sawako. So Jack Black.
Yeah. Welcome.
Fellow South Bay. You know about that, Brother Matt?
I didn't know that.
He's from the west side, of course, not Pedro's side, but he's close to us. He's
Hermosa Beach.
Bitch, welcome to the Pedro side.
The Strand doesn't come all the way down here from Hermosa, but, you know, we're neighborly.
Cool. Yeah. Very cool.
The Brown Sides.
From the cool old days when either or bookstore was there.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Right.
That's where I got my copy of The Giving Tree by Shel Silverstein.
Wow. Cool.
And there was a, I got some flannels of something called the Aardvark.
Yeah.
By the Fleet Dump.
I got a couple of autographed Bukowskis.
But I wonder, was that Hermosa or is that Dondo?
Oh, that was Hermosa.
Okay. Okay.
There was also a really good burrito joint down there on the Strand. And I can't remember what it was called, but it was on the corner, and there was always a line around the store, because the burritos tasted so good.
Around the corner from the poop deck.
Nah, I don't remember. It's so
foggy. There's one on TCH, But even in the old days, it was a hot dog stand, an A-frame kind of thing. Turned into Mexican Chow, and now it's always got the line.
You know, Burrito Day is coming.
It's Corn Dondo, huh?
Burrito Day is coming next weekend. Burrito Day,
yeah. You know, Brother Matt got it. The mayor, Mr. Tom Bradley, give him a paper.
Was it a 30-year anniversary of Burrito Day?
Yeah.
Oh, so you know about it. Okay.
Well, we were talking about it.
Yeah.
So that's like...
it's coming.
Burrito Day sort of was initiated at the same time as Dinosaur, realizing.
Yeah.
Coincidence?
Yeah. Mystery.
I think not.
Never.
John Doe, you might have been doing these gigs with X. And John Doe told me, he grew up in Baltimore. Mm. And he said this band came out of Cali called the Flying Burrito Brothers. He said nobody knew what fucking burritos were.
Yeah. When
you know they're invented in Cali.
Yeah, yeah.
But Chicago,
they don't have in Mexico. When Burrito Day came out, it was on AP Wire. I was getting calls from all around the country interviewing me, and a lot of places would say, well, what is a burrito? Well, first you get a tortilla. Well, wait a minute, what's a tortilla?
Those days are gone. Burritos
now,
are worldwide.
No, that when you're going to make your way across the Mojave, you better have frijoles, tortillas, and jalapenos.
Yeah.
Well, you'll never make it to La Jolla. Silicon Valley Joe.
Fried Joles. That's a new one for me. Free Joles, I can understand, but Fried Joles. That took a minute.
only way to get across the Mojave.
I
was telling you guys when I took him up, we were playing Buffalo. I said, you want to see? You get some big water here. Oh, Niagara!
Fried Joles are the key, though. They're not. There's a science to making them delicious.
The Fried Joles Fritos.
Yeah.
Need some good Fritos, lard.
Yeah.
There's some recipes. There's some secret Mexican recipes to making those perfect Fried Joles.
Some about it. And I think it had a little to do with lard.
Yeah.
A bit.
The
gotta be. Speaking of deliciousness, though. Brother Matt,
oh man,
you hooked me up this morning with I had never tasted it before, bacon donut.
Damn,
oh.
What was that?
Granny's,
okay.
Granny's, bro.
Yeah,
okay. Bacon donut.
Magic.
Maybe we could get them to make a bacon donut burrito.
Yeah.
So Hermosa.
Slap some Fried Joles on there.
And jalapenos.
Call it a night. That's all you need. One meal.
Simple pleasures.
Yeah. Maybe some caballos. earliest music memory.
You know, it's foggy. There's two songs that I remember. The first one that I liked, I'm pretty sure, was I Want to Hold Your Hand.
Beatles.
By the Beatles.
Beatles.
Yeah. And,
Batleys.
Yeah, that's just a great magical song when you're
old. You were boy.
Five.
Yeah, okay.
And then shortly after that, not as cool, Here It Comes, Take a Chance on Me.
Oh, wow.
By ABBA.
Sure.
So
this is stuff coming on the radio.
Yeah, coming out on the radio. I think it was in the car. And
radio rock.
And I remember my 5-year-old brain thinking, how am I going to hear that song again? Wait a second. What time is it right now? I'll just listen to the radio at the same time tomorrow.
Oh,
it's probably going to be safe. That's how they
move.
That's how it works, right? The world?
Okay. So, when you first heard music, did you want to be a participant or a spectator? Maybe kind of undecided.
You know, with music, I did enjoy just listening.
Yeah.
But I always had this dream of being up on stage.
Is there music in the house? Does people play?
Yeah, I had some musicians in the family. My oldest brother Neil was a Middle Eastern music enthusiast. He had like Middle Eastern folk dance and
some exotic
strange instruments that he would play, and I don't know where he got that influence, but he was a real smart dude. And
he brought it into the pad.
Yeah. And my parents loved Middle Eastern folk dance. Okay. That was kind of how they got together. And so sometimes I would go with them to those things, and there was some exotic, strange music happening there. My sister was more jazzy. She played like saxophone and flute, yeah. And she was in some interesting bands. She moved out when I was young, but I would go visit her in San Francisco a couple times, and she was playing with jazz bands, and they were pretty great. And then the middle brother of those three, because they were from my mom's previous marriage,
yes,
was Howard, and he was really deep into music, and he was like they were much older than me.
Okay.
And he was an assistant engineer with a producer named Bob Margaloff.
In a studio.
Yeah, in a studio. So he was like legit in the biz, and he was doing some rad shit. And he took me to my first concert ever.
What was that?
It was at the Santa Monica Civic.
Okay.
And it was a Devo.
Devo?
Yeah, man. I was like 11 or something. I don't know what year that was, a Freedom of Choice tour. We could Google it. Oh, whose idea to go to the show? Oh, it was his, because he was an assistant engineer on Freedom of Choice.
Oh, Criming.
Yeah. Whoa. And I went backstage.
That's the second album, right?
Oh, I don't know. It's an early album. It's
We Shut the Poles in the Hole.
Is it the second? It may be the third.
It's Kamikaze.
Well, no, it's like, you know, whip it, yeah, Gates of Steel.
Okay, okay.
They're peaking there. That's their massive, like, they're really riding the wave at that point. But that was a mind blower, because we got to go backstage and like catch little glimpses of the band as they're prepping, and I
suits.
They were in suits and the hats. They had the flower pot hats, and. I got a little photo with Mark Mothersbaugh.
Singerman.
Yeah, and it was a Polaroid, and he signed it, and I fucking lost it. Who knows where that is? Yeah, what an idiot.
Not lost. Donate.
I'm not good at saving. Donate it to the universe. That's a good way to think of it. You can't take it with you. But I sure would. You know, it's one of the things I wish I would have done in this life. For all the kids out there listening, just... You know, instead of throwing it all out, just get a big box and if there's little mementos or things that kind of mean something to you, put it in the box and put it in storage somewhere in the attic or wherever, because in 30, 40 years, it's really would be a great thing to be able to go back to my box that then it was like, this kind of means something to me, but now it would mean a lot to me. To go back and like look at these little things and go, and it's connected to a memory. You know, I don't have that box because I was such a like, moving on. Next!
Zen.
Yeah.
Gotta have more space than object.
Yeah.
Let's hear some more music.
Down. together with my stones, grown big with weeping, behind the bars. They drag me out into the middle of the market, that place where the flag unfurls, to which I swore no kind of allegiance. Flute, double flute of night. Remember the dark twin redness of Vienna and Madrid. Set your flag at half-mast, memory, at half-mast today and forever. Heart, here too reveal what you are, here in the midst of a market. Call the shibboleth, call it out, into your alien homeland. February, no pasarán. About the stones, you know about the water. Come, I shall lead you away to the voices of Extremadura.
Thank you. I'm gonna love her.
For Pedro Show, and we heard Rachel Hayden, brand new from her, On the Sun. After that, Shibboleth, Dan Kaufman, Umbrose Voorhees, Black Mama Super Rainbow, that's Pittsburgh, Dan Kaufman, New York City, Gestalt from Nervous Gender on Richard Meltzer's show in 1979, Had Cats from Hell, KPFK. I remember listening to that in the moment as it was happening. It was trippy. I found that. I Pulled My Helmet Off, I'm Gonna Love Her by Zolar X. I first saw them as a picture in Pink's. People used to put their picture in Pink's. I think it was part of the dealio, you know. Besides sitting in Schwab's.
Yeah.
You would get your shot. And Zolar X. Yeah, true. Roddy would play them sometimes.
That's how you knew if you made it, if you got your picture up at Pink's.
Or it was part of the process.
Oh, yeah.
No. Kyoko with Poom Poom, and finally Ichi with Hippo Plus 47.
So wait a second, let me clear this up.
Yeah.
Did the owner of Pink's decide who was good enough to be up on the wall, or could anyone just go up and slap a picture?
I think when I found it, which was in the late 70s, there was a club maybe half block down called Blackie's, and I was at a Dills gig, and that's how I found out about it. It's on Melrose and La Brea. and they're $1.25. They're good dogs. They snap when you bit them. And I wondered the same thing. Was there some kind of vetting process? Or if you just anybody brought it up, they need to cover the bulkheads with stuff. I don't know. Some people were very well known. Some people you didn't know at all. So I wondered that too. Was he the gatekeeper? Was Paul Pink, wasn't good enough just to have a dog stand? I met Orson Welles there.
No shit.
Yeah. No shit.
That wasn't his first trip to Pink's, I bet.
Yeah, chewy dog in each hand. Mr. Welles. I said, "Jug man, I would shake your hand, but I am busy." He was. His hands were full. You know how they say Irish handcuffs? Or some Welles handcuffs or pink dogs. And they're good. Me and Tony, pool cleaner friend of mine here, Peter, we go all the way up there. This dog's like 28 miles. Oh, all that traffic just to get pink dogs. We got into them. I don't know. Now there's a line, though. In those old days, a cat named Johnny worked there. Never a line.
There's always a line now.
I'm not a big hot dog guy. I'm much more burritos. You wrap it in a burrito. Do they do a burrito dog?
Oh, they had all kinds.
Here we are.
There's a document. Yeah, but there was. Pink's had something with a tortilla and chili, and they put dogs in there. There was a burrito dog.
Oh.
There was all kinds of dogs. But just a mustard, chili, and onion those days, that's what we liked.
Yeah.
Anyway, going back to music in the house.
Yeah.
When did you, grab onto it?
Well, we had a piano, and so I did some playing early on. I had my, year of piano lessons. And at the time, I thought, oh, this is like homework. But I did have a couple songs that I really wanted to learn. And I said to myself, once I learn these songs, I am done with piano. And it was...
kind of heavy? Is it beaten with the ruler on the knuckle?
God, it's so foggy. I don't remember. I don't think she was a Madame Sasaka.
You've had people on shows that got scared out of music from the piano. Very horrific traumatizing.
Yeah.
Had to, go do... who was the lady we had on? She had to do... avant-garde music to learn how to love piano again because of these horrible experiences of being beat down with a brack.
Oh, man. Well, they say that happened to Beethoven.
Is that right?
And you see how it worked with the kid in Whiplash. I don't know if you saw that great movie. Maybe it's good to have an evil Madame Sasatska sometimes. But no, I think this was a sweet lady. And
you know what, though? Maybe I'm wrong.
Do it.
But that young man who was... getting beat down.
Yeah.
He was kind of a dick.
He did kind of need a beating.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, in the...
That's so horrible.
Did you hear about this eagle pecking on that other pecker? Sometimes it works out that way. So, what were the two songs? I'm curious.
I wanted to learn the Pink Panther.
Okay.
Mancini. Mm. And I also wanted to learn some Joplin. I really liked that movie.
Back.
Yeah. What was that movie that had the entertainer where they were...
Sting?
Yeah, the Sting, man. Mm-hmm. When they were running like that and jumping over fences.
I read a book by the producer.
Yeah.
She just recently died. Michelle Phillips?
Okay, sure.
It's called You'll Never Eat Lunch in This Town Again.
Oh.
And, man, was it heavy. I guess there wasn't a lot of lady producers, so she was handling. And she did that movie. And I remember... A lot of it's blurry, but one thing I remember, she said her boyfriend dropped the crack pipe and burned down the mansion.
So, whoa.
I don't think not everybody can have that in their bio.
Yeah.
Not a lot of Pedro dudes. But
I learned the Pink Panther.
So you learned one of them.
But I didn't stick to it till I learned, and it's still in my head, even now, 45 years old, I'm thinking, I really got to get back there and learn some Joplin, some Maple Leaf Rag. But that's a real serious thing when you got your both hands moving like that.
One man band.
Yeah, because the two hands are doing totally different things, and that's some complex stuff. I think it would take me another 5 years probably to really get the Joplin going. But
Vincent Van Gogh painted only in his last 10 years.
Is that true?
I shit thee not.
Wow.
His brother was involved with art, of course.
Yeah.
Dealer and stuff, so he was around it.
Right.
But he didn't start to paint until last year.
Yeah, I was thinking that because I got boys now. I got a 7 and 9 year old boy, Sammy and Tommy,
Yeah.
And I don't want to force them into the music. They are musical. But
you got a piano in the house?
We got a piano in the house. And I was thinking maybe I'll get myself some piano lessons, and then they'll want to jump onto my lessons.
Oh, yeah.
Might be a good stratego.
Yeah, good stratego.
But,
yeah.
Instead of like the big old coercion, yeah. You're just like, whoa. Just put it out there.
I want some of that.
Yeah. I think it might be a good way to go. Yeah.
Okay, so.
But, yeah.
You only make it to Pink Panther.
Yeah.
But you stick with wanting to play, but not piano.
Exactly. I like singing a lot. But there's also some other musical influences in the house, yeah. Because my parents divorce, right? My dad moves out. Now my mom's got, and my older brothers and sister move out because they're way older. They're done. So I'm like 8 or 9, and my mom starts taking in people to rent rooms in this big house we got in Hermosa Beach. And one of the dudes is a cool guy that like had this awesome dog that would catch frisbees, and he was really into Simon and Garfunkel, and who's the drummer guy that has the name and the band sings ding 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 ding. This is so horrible. My brain. What good am I in an interview? I can't remember the most. Fleetwood Mac.
Okay. The tune.
Yeah. And so
that's Peter Green, Fleetwood Mac, the one with the ladies.
Yeah, of course. It goes without saying. But so I was getting into some of that stuff, but I started to have this dream that.
Was he putting records in the house?
We had the turntable and the record collection, and when we started getting people living in the house with us, the record collection got bigger, and I was listening to some more interesting stuff, and I started to have this little dream that I would someday be up on stage in front of a huge audience, and I would be like a one-man band, but no instruments, just by singing. But somehow...
A cappella.
But somehow it was superhuman because I was able to sing harmonies with myself. Like I would be able to sing out my mouth, but then out of one nostril would come like a different sound. And that the audience would be like, what the fuck? And then they would like revere me like some kind of a genius. And it was an early kind of greed for love and adoration. I don't know where that came from, but you know.
Kids get notions
where they get, yeah, they can dream big. So I was dreaming big. And then, yeah. And then years later, in my early teens,
yeah.
I saw on the Grammys, I was watching the Grammys for some reason, and best jazz vocalist was Bobby McFerrin, early McFerrin. This is pre Don't Worry, Be Happy, mind you.
Okay.
And he was just a god, you know, Jesse. And he was up there singing. And he was doing the thing that I was dreaming about. He wasn't harmonizing with himself, but he was making a cappella and making noises. But it sounded like three people because, you know, he had that, it's almost like a yodel where he'll be down here. But way more musical and beautiful. And so I was just, you know, zeroing in on this guy's action. And that's when I got a Tascam Portafive recorder, so I could record stuff on tracks, and I could sing with myself.
High school,
exactly, yeah, and doing that kind of stuff was sort of my real, yeah, voice on voice, and that was my entry, my gateway into the music world for myself.
No garage bands with like classmates.
Yeah, well, there was a couple experiment. Bands jamming in a garage in high school, not in Hermosa.
Are you Vista?
No, I was in Hermosa just up through fourth grade. It was just the early formative years at a little school called North School. That was a grade school that was right above Valley Park, and up at the top of that dirt hill, there was a, and we lived right there, and I would walk to school, and I would never let my boys walk to school now. It's a different world. You walked to school.
D-Boone got rides.
Oh, his he got rides.
Got him every
yeah.
day.
She was already on the tip. Taking.
When you did them garage jams, were you on The Voice or were you rocking something else?
I was on The Voice. I wasn't rocking a guitar until I met Kyle many years later. That was, you know.
But in the garage, you're the singer.
Yeah, I was the singer, and we were doing stuff, you know, writing songs. But
you were writing songs?
Eh,
right away.
Kind of. There were some improvisational jams. It never.
But not copying records?
No. No,
right.
We were just we were copying records a little bit, not whole records, but we had some covers that we would do, and
for example, I'm curious.
God, we did Iron Man.
Yeah, Sabbath.
Yeah, we did some Sabbath, and but we only had a few, or I don't know, five or six rehearsals. And then we played at this party. It was all, the band was formed and rehearsed
just for
this first gig. It was all about this party.
Yeah.
And it did not go well. We played in the middle of the first song,
yeah.
The crowd just sort of lost interest and were talking amongst themselves and we were looking around and going, this fucking sucks. we rehearsed the songs, let's finish the set. But we didn't finish the set even. I think we played two songs and we were like, we give up. You win.
Whoa.
And we walked
off. The towel got thrown in.
The towel got
tossed.
Once it got to, because it started off, everyone was like, let's hear what this is about. And once we had zero audience, that's when we were like, it's over. It was a horror. So we walked off, but then as we were walking off, these other kids came up. It was my friend Brent Meskey and this amazing drummer. We didn't know he was an amazing drummer at the time, but Joey Warrenker, who you may know, yes.
Two hi-hats.
Yeah, two hi-hats.
No, he was doing those days. Right?
And they said, hey, we practiced a couple songs earlier this afternoon. We're not a band, but can we use your kit and your stuff to play a song we just wrote a second ago? They're like, yeah, go ahead. Good luck, guys. And they went up there. And immediately as they started to play, the crowd like turned around and was like, oh, something interesting is happening here. And they just killed. The horror continued.
Round two of the horror.
So it was like, wait, this is the end of my musical career.
Not only did you shit the pamper,
but
the pamper gets put on top of the head and pushed into the hair. Look, Pedro, we had keggers, right? And
yeah.
Was one of the like supreme kahunas was... Some dude's taking your guitar, your equipment, and then blowing you, doing Black Dog better than you could ever even dream of. It was a total... Nobody wrote their own songs, you know, so nobody could, like, have a better song. But they could do the Black Dog and just shame you.
Man.
So never even try to pick it up again.
If they could do Black Dog, they could shame most people, because that's a tough song. What's that time signature when it does that weird turnaround?
Yeah.
No, 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 no.
The way you fit the drums to...
Are we sure that song's really finished? I'm not certain. I think they needed, like, just one more... writing session.
So after that experience,
I was like, I'm going to focus on the acting. But in the acting, there was musical theater, so I was still getting music in there.
Okay.
We did a production of Pippin in high school.
Wow, I remember that.
Yeah,
cool.
yeah. The Bob Fosse incredible thingy, majiggy. And if you remember, the original Broadway production was on, like, Showtime or whatever the, like, first cable channel was back in the 70s. And so I knew that play before we did it because I saw, and it was like, the dude that starred in it was The Greatest American Hero. Same guy.
Oh.
Along with Ben Vereen.
Ben Vereen
crushes it.
Yeah, yeah.
Whenever you see Ben Vereen, if you're a musical theater person, you know that guy's a god. Yeah. So,
that's more about singing too, right?
That's all singing.
Right.
Yeah. And so I kept the little burning embers of musical dream alive in there for a while. And then when I started doing, plays with this theater company from Southern California. You may have heard of the Actors Gang.
I saw in the early 80s a version of Ubu.
You saw Ubu?
Yeah, in what's his name?
Tim Robbins.
Yeah, he was the man.
Yeah.
And it was on Santa Monica Boulevard. I think the theater was called the Actors Gang.
Yeah.
It's by where the dragonfly kind of was.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw.
Amazing. That's
it blew me away because of the Alfred Jarry and the Punk Connect. I could see this play that people, right, he says mirrored the first word shit.
Yeah.
And it started a whole thing 100 years ago or more.
Riots.
So, okay.
So
you're connected with that.
So I got connected, not in those days, not until later. I got in like at the late 80s. I did a production with them called The Big Show, and it was all about like the Sandinistas and the politics of Colombia drug and United States politics, and it was cool and it was fun. I got some of my Tascam Porter 5 songs in there, and I did a little acting. But that's where I met Kyle, and Kyle was like the musical dude.
So you mean that Tascam, you were still using it at home?
Oh yeah, no, that was a big part of my thing. And
no performances, you're still
no live performances. Yeah. But yeah, I was obsessed with harmonies, and I just loved. I loved.
So Kyle was an actor too in this play.
Kyle was an actor there. He'd been there for a long while. He wasn't in Ubu either, but he was there longer than me, and he was connected with them through.
What part of town is he from?
He's actually from Northern Cal. He's from a little place called Walnut Creek.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's in what they call South Bay, nice
yeah.
San Mateo and all that.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, gorgeous neighborhood.
Maybe Neil Young.
I think that is Neil. Neil Young's Canadian originally, right?
Yeah,
but you're saying he's there now. Yeah. Well, he's got a place in like the hills near San Francisco, and I know this because a few years back, me and Kyle played this benefit that he does every year, Bridge School benefit,
because
one of his kids suffers from autism and a couple other things. And so he started a school for kids with similar disabilities, and he funds it every year with his mega concert that everyone's going to do it. If he asks them, they come out. But it wasn't his idea to get Tenacious D there. It was his daughter, I'm pretty sure, was saying, "Come on, get Tenacious D," because she thought we were funny. So he got us, and the deal is with that show, anyone who's in the show gets to come out to his sweet pad in the hills.
It is Walnut Creek, because that's, for some reason, it's in
it's
my head.
Not in Walnut Creek. Okay. No, it's in like a deep forest.
But it ain't too far from there.
No,
that's
no.
That's where I heard it. Okay,
yeah.
So Kyle, and what, he came down here to seek fame and fortune? And
so,
that?
Yeah, he comes down. I think he was at the junior college, Santa Monica Junior College.
Okay.
First, and then went over to UCLA, and he hooked up with the Actors Gang through that connection, because they're all UCLA theater
folks.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah, and then so I meet Kyle at that production, and we strike up a friendship, and I wanted him to teach me guitar. I've been looking all my life for
You wanted to play guitar.
I needed a sensei. I wanted to play.
Yeah.
So he had an extra acoustic guitar, and I bought it from him for $200, which I think went straight to his rent, which is fine, whatever.
Sure.
But it was overpriced. I don't think it was worth $200. It was a beater. But
big action.
And in exchange for Jack in a Box, I would bring him Jack in a Box every day. He would would give me another lesson in guitar.
Oh, so barter.
Yeah, there was a barter system there. It wasn't strictly bro down, but we were bros. We were tight bros.
Was it hard learning?
The first year.
It was harder than piano.
Yes. Well, because there's pain. Piano, there's no pain.
You're just pushing buttons.
You just push buttons. Any child can walk up and make noise. Guitar, you can make noise,
and
but you can't make beautiful notes.
The wires.
Yeah. That wire, the first year was just getting the doggy pads on my fingertips.
Sure. Well, your most sensitive nerves, right?
Yeah.
For touch.
But there's two things that make it difficult.
Yeah.
Doggy pad, fingertip pain.
Yeah.
And then also finger musculature.
Right.
There's two separate things that need to be worked. And it took a year for me to really be able to make good, solid sound of all the major chords.
Yeah, you know. What's harder, left hand or right hand? Is the strumming or was it the fingering?
Left hand.
Okay.
Without a doubt.
Okay.
I mean, for the style that I was playing.
Yeah. Keeping your fingers all in those positions.
But to that point, my right hand is pretty weak. I mean, I don't have the good
strum.
The proper, yeah, Madame Sasatsko would be whipping my knuckles if she saw my strum. It's not the proper. You're supposed to have a loose wrist and really
nice.
Let, yeah. No, I'm more of a this Neanderthal just making loud. I have a good strong attack. Yeah. I like to attack my acoustic.
What about Kyle? He was a sensei. He was a
Kyle's man. Like a real proficient guitar player. You know, he studied in school.
Pick of Destiny kind of relationship in the beginning.
Exactly. Well, Pick of Destiny is a movie that we wrote and made. Not many people saw it. Thank you, Matt, for noticing. But Pick of Destiny was an autobiographical
story
film.
Of the band.
It's a story of the band with there's many
cool.
liberties taken with the truth, but you know, the basic genesis of our relationship is in there. You know,
what do you think about movies about music? Do they ever work?
There's not a lot of great ones that capture the excitement of the event. It's a tough nut to crack.
Because Hollywood loves making movies about movies.
Yeah.
It seems when you want to make it about bands, it's tough.
Yeah.
But as a movie viewer, just like not knowing the people in there, that was a way, little bits here and there of getting some insight into thinking, man, you're cool. From that and from School of Rock, because I saw Minutemen was written on the board.
Oh, yeah.
And he had all the names up there.
No doubt.
That's like real subtle.
I'd like to take credit for that one, by the way.
Yeah,
you know that the board, the chalkboard that you're talking about, that was Rick Linklater's idea. He wanted to have a tree with all the branches of rock, all the meaningful branches in the history of music. And so he started it off. He drew. He wrote some band names. And then, but he said to everybody in the cast and crew, anyone who thinks we're missing something here, go ahead and put up a branch. And I definitely put up the Minutemen branch.
Yeah, that was bitchin'.
Because I love me some Minutemen.
Wow.
And
Kyle's showing you this. You just want to learn guitar, but do you have an idea in your mind that you want to make a band?
I'm definitely thinking that me and Kyle have something. That we have something and we're going to get up on stage at some point. But mostly I just like needed a friend. He was filling a gap, you know, that I had in my life. I needed a bro.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit of a father figure or something. There's a, you know, it's like a brother.
Is he a little older?
A fro. He was a father bro.
Is he a little older?
Yeah, he's like 10 years older.
Oh, shit.
I like to remind him of it every time he's exactly 10 years older. Because usually he's only 9 years older, but there's a magical 2 months where I'm like, dude, you're a full decade older. So much older. But,
old one.
Yeah.
Old one.
Yeah.
That's the first hour. December 10th. 2015 edition Wap Bebo Show, Brother Matt, special guest Jack Black.
Very cool.
Hold tight for hour two.
Yeah.
December 10, 2015. It's the second hour, Wap Bebo Show.
Ten asi na ty, co sápe a nechce čekat. Zvalvanem se zde se země, které stromy kořeny uhýbají, jiné to zlomí.
Marini se zdá, že svět pospíchá.
Co je to uschované, to bez pomoci. Snaží se propasit ven a sílu sbírá. Zůstane tady po něm jen krásná díra.
Všichni ještě spí. Nikdo netuší. Čím se praní vlze setká po probuzení.
Zavře se zem, balvan se brání. Zavře se zem, všech se tu stání. Kořeny ustupují a balvan matou. Lidi ho neunesou, neví jak na to.
Lidi ho neunesou, neví jak na to. Lidi ho neunesou, neví jak na to. Lidi ho neunesou, neví jak na to. Lidi ho
was an unspoken pact. We just didn't ring. It made life very simple. One day life was too simple. In fact, I had become a simpleton. That made me feel good. And then I met a new friend. She had dyslexia, and she was right or left in her brain. And she was sad because she couldn't read.
Watford Pedro Show. Start the second hour off with Tool Jazz by X Blank X out of Cleveland. Maruska, after that, Usmadoma, let's check. Bolt Thrower, Tank Mark One. Somebody said I should hear this because they got a lady bass player. I think they're from England. And Reg Bloor, who actually ran the band when I got to be part of Symphony 13, Glenn Branca. 20 basses, 64 guitars, one drummer.
Whoa.
I sat next to the drummer. Virgil, yeah. So that's Subconscious Decay from her new album. My Dolls, I used to not read out of Houston. They got back together after 30 years or something. One Drop of Rain, Laurie Amott and John Truby collaborating, new proj, and Big Crux with Crux Knock. And a young man gave me his record in Tacoma a couple weeks ago, and he said, I told you we were going to make this. Yeah. And man, it's, maybe this has happened to you. It's awkward when you can't remember them telling you that.
Oh, man. Yeah. I have that.
When I first saw Rocky Erickson, when I got to talk to him, it was maybe 30 years between. He was on the Game Boy stage or some shit at Lollapalooza and got off the plane after Stooges gig. And he got right up and played, and he comes down the stairs after he's done. And I shook his hand, and he looked me right in the eye and said, it's great to see you again. Maybe it's just
if only he had just left out the again, it would have been fine.
And also the eye, the penetrating stare that drilled holes in the back. But I just love Rocky Erickson. It's a huge influence on me. Like,
which era?
I like, I don't know it, because the letters were written some alien, so I don't know how you pronounce this, but
yeah.
Ed's Rippin' Open. It's the one that Creedence bass player Stu Cook produced.
Oh.
It's got Two-Headed Dog and I Walk with a Zombie Man.
Oh, so that's the later.
I think there was a U.S. version later called The Evil One that had some tracks. But this is the one from England on CBS where his head is being ripped open and something's flying out or something.
But it's post 13th floor elevators. This
but
is
you know,
the,
he didn't write a lot of the 13th floor elevators.
Right.
Songs. Drummer Man wrote a lot of the words. So, okay, father figure.
Fucker gently.
Going figure. Kyle is a missing component in your life that you found.
Yeah.
But you also want to do gigs with him.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first gig?
I do.
How did it come about?
I do. Well,
so you tell him, Kyle, we're going to do a gig.
I think it was mutual. We both knew we had something. Because even though no one had seen us play before, just jamming and learning and writing and recording and smoking and recording and smoking and listening, we knew there was something just funny and electric about our.
Is it still the task game?
It was, no. At this point, it's not about tracking. At this point, it's about Radio Shack, I can't remember the name of the model, but it's the one of those tape recorders where you push the play and the red button at the same time to record. And cause it's all just scratch pad.
Yeah.
And we would record, and we were working on our first song, Tribute, our first good song. I mean, we did a song before that. That was a love song. That was horrible because it was very sincere and it just didn't, it didn't.
We're not going to mention the title.
Let's not even talk about it. But when we figure out, we crack the code of what we're about, there's got to be this element of humor and mischievousness, and then we're going to work on this song, Tribute. It's going to, well, no, first we're going to write the greatest song in the world. That's how it started.
Yeah.
We're going to write the greatest song in the world, and we're going to call it the greatest song in the world.
Okay.
We're going to write, and so.
No mysteries.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we start.
What about the idea of the duet? Did you decide that early?
That both of us singing together?
Well, when you start off, you didn't have other cats.
Yeah. No, it's true. It was just it was a two-man operation. Yeah. It was never in question.
Okay.
It was just, he was a singer and guitar player, and I was a singer, budding guitar player, and so.
That's enough.
Yeah. So we would just play, and we worked on that for a while, and then. When we cracked the code, we realized, wait, this is never going to work, this whole greatest song in the world thing. We got to go one step removed.
Yeah.
Let's say, you know, it's a tribute to the greatest song, because we forgot the greatest song. That was the big breakthrough. That was like the God moment where the skies opened up and it was like, yes! And we worked on that, and then we got it really good. And then our theater company, the Actors Gang Theater, was doing a fun little thing on the side at a coffee shop on Highland called Highland Grounds. And
I
so
think I played there with Dose.
Oh, did you?
There were several rooms somewhere outside.
Yeah,
I remember it was kind of
exactly.
Spread out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there was a stairway inside,
that's
and so
right.
people could watch from the stairway. And
that's right.
And so
I actually played there. Wow.
Yeah. So we went there. And I remember we played a cover of Find the Cost of Freedom, the Neil Crosby, Stills, and Young, Nash and Young. And then we wanted to name the band right there. And so
so there's no name before the gig.
No name before the gig, but we had a few options. And one of them was The Responsive Chord. We thought it was funny because it was very pretentious. Or Gorgazon's Mischief. Balboa's Biblical Theater, Pets or Meat. And that one, there was one person in the audience who really was like...
Well, you were calling them out. You were asking the people.
We were asking the people. Okay. But Pets or Meat got a thumbs up. And we looked, who's the thumbs up? And who do you think the thumbs up was? It was, again, bass player from Spinal Tap.
Yeah, Harry...
Harry Shearer. Thank you. And so that was like a sign from the heavens as well.
Right.
Dude, bass player from Spinal Tap is here and listening to
Derek
our first
Smalls.
Ever show. Derek Smalls. Yeah, lukewarm.
Yeah.
So good. And then Tenacious D, which didn't get the biggest response, but we had already decided we're going to be Tenacious D. It doesn't matter what they say. And then we played a real rough version of that song, Tribute, the greatest song in the world, and it went good. It wasn't huge, it wasn't great, but it went good enough we could tell we've got something here. And then and then shortly after that, we got another gig. A friend of ours, Steve Mora Marco, had a band, the Abe Lincoln Story, and they were playing.
I remember them.
You remember them? Yeah, very funny dudes. He's a kind of a genius guy.
Is he still playing? Good.
He has projects going on all the time, but he also had a band called Mind Crime, where the band would come on stage and just start playing a set, but they don't have any instruments and they make no sound. But you can tell the kind of music they're playing from the movements and the gestures. Brilliant shit like that. So anyway, he asks us to open for him, for Abe Lincoln's Story, and we just have, you know, Tribute. We just have the one song at this point. So we're coming out to open with our one song, because we're not going to do the covers. So we're just going to do our song. And maybe it's just my memory changing the history or the reality, but I swear it felt like the audience was so enthusiastic that it was just like, we are real. This is happening now. You heard them. They don't know who we are. There's no reason for them to cheer for us.
Yeah.
That was just real love and appreciation of something that we were bringing to the party. And from there, there was a dude named David Cross who had started this thing with Bob Odenkirk. These comedian guys are great. They did a show called Mr. Show, but they hadn't done that yet. They had just come off of the Ben Stiller show, and they were looking for their next project. And he was like, "I want you guys to play that song, you know, I want you guys to open for us." And they were from a different world. They weren't music.
Yeah.
They were comedy, sketch comedy, but they wanted us to do our thing as a sketch comedy thing.
Yeah.
So we got introduced into that world.
Yeah.
And then when they got on HBO with their Mr. Show, they brought us along as a little caboose, like a little cartoon appetizer before.
Little side mouse.
So really, yeah, that's the kind of the genesis of that whole.
Pretty trippy, brother, man.
Yeah, very cool.
We're going to have a special edition of Spin Cycle.
Yeah, let's see what happens.
Okay. Oh, my God, we're going to do it? We're going to spin it up?
rabbit set loose. So I'm shooting my juice. Then we're all right in your cocoon. I'm a Thank you.
sign and it says where to go, and when I get there, what I'll find. I know you tried to see me, but honey, I'm still having trouble finding out what's here.
You've been an incredible audience. Looking forward to coming back to Copenhagen very soon. Well, as soon as we have another record up, this one goes out to the dudes. On the behest of the ladies. Have to fuck her hard. In fact, sometimes that's not right to do. Sometimes you've got some mates around and fucking give her some smooches too. Sometimes you got to squeeze. Sometimes you got to say please. Sometimes you got to say, hey, I'm gonna fuck you softly. I'm gonna screw you gently. I'm gonna hump you sweetly. I'm gonna fall you discreetly. And then you say, hey, I brought you flowers. And then you say, wait a minute, Sally, I think I got something in my teeth. Could you get it out of me? That's fucking teamwork. What's your favorite position?
Oh,
that's cool with me. It's not my favorite, but I do it for you. What's your favorite dish? I'm not gonna cook it, but I'll order it from Zanzibar. And then I'm gonna love you completely. And then I'll fucking fuck you discreetly. And then I'll fucking pawn you completely. But then I'm gonna fuck.
rock in Hollywood. Drove up from Pedro. We were fucking corn dogs. We'd go drink at Pogo.
Much for your spin cycles. What prompted you to do what you just did to us?
Well, Jack got it started with his comment about starting his musical journey with some Pink Panther. So I quickly dug up some little Pink Panther there and then took it from there. He's like Jack Black's kind of like the fifth meat puppet. So he had to have some meat puppets in there for sure.
And the rapping collaboration was reminding me of that Abe Lincoln story, Cats Mime Crime Man.
Mime Crime.
You had a lot of the Mime Crime.
Yeah, true. We'd worked on that earlier. We were working on that earlier.
It looked like breath. It's kind of from the gut, kind of improv, but
we were covering that earlier. It came out good.
I love that. Thank you. I love that meat puppet song. That
when he goes, and I know there'll come a day when I know that you won't need me. You know that that one lost.
Lost on the freeway.
And on the record, really?
Yeah.
Okay. And on the record, he does a note that's so satisfying, right at that part.
Yeah.
And I know those. And the guitar, it's like a soaring.
No one ever owes me anymore.
Yeah. But the note that he's playing on guitar, and he never does that note live. I'm always like, why not that? Why of all the notes to drop, would you drop the most?
Because I don't think Kurt ever plays the same solo twice.
That's it.
He's the moment guy.
Well, don't be surprised if you ever see the meat puppets. Don't be surprised if I jump up and sing that note.
Bring that note.
Just at that point.
Yeah. You know, it's trippy because Steve Boone said the same
thing. The same thing about that note.
Steve Boone's a big hero, fan of Kirk Kirkwood playing.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And we did that for a Bob Mould 45. It's called Torspiel EP.
Yeah.
And we changed the beat a little bit. We do it like funk, right?
Mm.
Yeah. We do like a slow funk.
Oh, I gotta get that.
It's a 7-inch. He had a label for a while called Reflex.
Okay.
It's on there.
I'm getting that. Thank you.
Maybe an MP3. I don't have the vinyl anymore. I wish. I don't even have one myself. I remember the pictures. It was that tour of '84. We did a summer tour, and we thought it's sweaty around the country in summertime.
Yeah.
And they like Pedro. So we know how we'll stay cool. We'll cut all our hair off. Maybe 1 degree. And then we had to answer skinhead Nazi questions a whole bunch.
Oh God!
It was not worth it. People's not worth it. You're not going to gain that much temperature saving.
It feels kind of cool though in the shower when the water
first one was the most intense. I never had that. It was like snowball. It felt like a shark in a way, but then the water was like snowballs. It was really intense. And then real genius move was going to Ensenada and swimming at Rosarita Beach all day
because
you gotta breathe, right? So your head's, for 7-8 hours, we were totally sunburned.
Oh, this God.
Stuff had never been exposed.
Oh, God.
I mean, the whole thing from the get-go was fucking insane. We didn't know that you use clippers. We thought, just use a shaver, these big shavers that had one blade.
Oh, God.
Luckily, I was first. I mean, both of us.
our heads looked like a motocross track.
You know, oh, God.
Fucking shit. Yeah, it hurt like a motherfucker getting that shit off with a big razor. Oh, man. And then when we got up, see, it was Georgie's plan. We were opening for Joanna Wendt. She's kind of a performance artist. So Georgie says, why don't we look like burned out matchsticks? So the plan was to go and shave our heads off and then wipe motor oil all over our face.
Oh, God, that would burn.
The cuts. We do, me and D. Boone do the first part. You'll get bald. We drive up there. And Georgie comes up there and hits it. You didn't do it.
He's got a full head of hair.
Tip the unit.
Yeah, and but D. Boone's like, fuck it, and he reaches under the car and gets a big hunk of oil from the motor, and so the picture of it looks like somebody gave him a black eye, you know, because after he started, I said, D. Boone, you're going to get pimples up the yank, you know? Blackhead, right, carbuncle, like, no, so he's got this kind of Uncle Fester look, you know, on one side, and Georgie's laughing at us, saying, you motherfucker, it was his idea. Anyway, that's our, what about Torn? When did the Torn life come to Tenacious D?
Well, so we do that little thing on HBO.
Sure.
And this is before we have any kind of recorded material. We don't
care.
We don't have any recorded material. Yeah, no, but by then, once we're on the air on HBO, we've got songs. We've got more songs because we've got, for every episode we did, we had another song. So we had like 6-7 songs.
Oh, wow.
And
you would write?
Yeah, we would write
for the episode. We would write a song and then use that.
Both. Some song we hit, you know, we built up a few songs, and then we would write some songs for the episodes.
Yeah.
And actually, by the end of it, we had like almost a full album's worth of music. But there was a time where people knew us already without a record. We're kind of like the Monkees in a way,
sure,
because we're a TV band, except that we didn't have Crosby, Stills, and Nash writing songs. We didn't have Neil Diamond writing songs in the Wings. We wrote our own songs. But,
yeah, but what about when you recorded them for the TV show? In a way, those were recordings.
Those were live. They recorded them live. And we didn't really...
So it's like a gig in front of the microphone.
Exactly. So that wasn't studio recordings that could just be put onto a record really, really effectively.
Yeah.
You could do it, but it wouldn't sound like a record, really. I don't know what that would sound. It would sound like a live record, I guess. But,
bingo.
Yeah. So then we were already doing some concerts before that, you know, at Largo. Yeah, after Highland Grounds, and while we were going and doing these comedy gigs, we were also doing gigs at a little place called Largo. Then it was on Fairfax. Now it's on La Cienega.
Right, from Canada.
Yeah, and this Irish dude, Flanny, Mark Flanagan, ran the show there, and it was a great little place for music and comedy. And we would have like 100 people come. We started building up a little...
Isn't it La Cienega? Is it that old vaudeville?
Exactly. Now it's Largo at the Cornet.
That's it.
That's right.
Theater, brother, man. You got to go there.
Yeah, it's
that
a great spot.
Great had to see anybody play.
It's true. There's good respect for the music there, and they get good quality musicians. But, you know, we started building up just without the TV show. We started building up a little group of, like, 100 people would come and see us. And we had a good draw. Just grassroots, word of mouth.
Yeah.
But then once the thing came on the air, the demand was, like, overnight. We were like the Monkees, man. It was like 1,000 people wanted to come see us. And we were playing at the Gazzari's on the Strip. But it wasn't called Gazzari's anymore. Now it was called the Key Club. Ooh. Then we set up a little tour, also just on the strength of the TV show.
Sure.
And we had great crowds all over the country. And so,
how big was it? How many days?
We didn't keep track of the days, but I think we did like, 20 or 30 shows around the country. And,
three, 4 weeks.
And, some of the best were, you know, Seattle Oregon, we had some great shows in Texas.
What did you think about touring? Because you never toured before.
I loved it, man. I loved it. There's no better way to see the country.
Yeah.
Because I'm not big on vacations. Yeah. I can't relax. Yeah. I feel like my life is passing by. Why am I? What am I doing out here? Just touristing.
Yeah.
It feels. I get anxious.
Sure.
Sure. But when I'm on, when I'm going to a city to do a job, and I've got that thing in my head, I'm going to play tonight, but in between now and tonight, my job, I'm going to walk around the city.
Yeah.
It's the best way to see the country. I just loved walking around with a purpose and you know, just sort of thinking about stuff I might say in between songs while I'm walking through little nooks and crannies that I'd never been to before. Is really
all relating to the town.
Yeah, all relating to the town. You want to show appreciation for these kids' neighborhoods, and I just remember just loving all the people. Like when we would walk or drive up to the venue and see the kids in line, I was just like, I love all these kids. I don't know where they came from. They came to see us. And I just like, well, then they're good people for me. Yeah, it was a great success.
Well, then maybe the album.
And then we're like, the next thing is, you know, maybe we got to do this. We got to do a real record, and we got the Dust Brothers, who we love their stuff with the Beastie Boys and with Beck, and we were like, well, those
they
guys
the
are good.
The first venue with Perkins.
Yeah.
It was their idea. Look, we'll put Stravinsky over your phones. Like,
yeah.
Spring.
Oh, is that
and
right?
You nails. Money Mark and what? Well, jam. And no one will ever hear the Stravinsky, but they'll hear what you were jammed in.
Whoa. That's a cool idea.
Sewing machines with that pan flute. And then we were trying to in the night session. And also, the other thing was, you're all in separate rooms. You don't see each other.
Right.
So it's only over the headphones.
Amazing. Yeah. So that's
the favorite idea, man. So,
that's
so
the kind of creativity they bring to the table, and they had lots of ideas about capturing little nuggets of comedy that would be in between the songs just from us riffing and having fun in the studio. And sonically, they had real great, rich tapestries and helped us, like, finish songs. Like, some of our songs were not quite there, and they were those kind of producers that could actually get in there into the music and, like, earn that that percentage, you know. But we had a blast doing that, and also we were fortunate enough that because on the record we'd always only just played me and Kyle, but on the record the Dust Brothers were like, let's flesh these out, why not bring a whole band in and really do it, just to see, maybe it's better than just the two of you. And we were real hesitant, and we were like, okay, but here's the thing. If we don't like it, we erase it, and we just go, just me and Kyle.
Sure.
And we were 90% sure we're going to just be me and Kyle. It's not gonna, the band thing is not going to work.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, we had these great musicians that were like friends of ours that had seen our show and were like fans, so that we could say, hey, you know, Steve McDonald from Red Cross, you know, we know you like our band. Do you want to come play? And he's like, he's in. And then Warren Fitzgerald from from the Vandals. So, you know, we know that you like our thing, and he was in. And then Dave Grohl came to see a show that we did one time, and I said, would you play drums? And he was like, sure, I'll play a couple songs. But then we locked him in the door, and we forced him to play the whole album. And he's such a nice guy. He just say, all right, I'll do the whole fucking album.
He played Satan in the.
He played Satan. Yeah, no, we've been forcing him to do stuff against his will.
He is great
for years. But anyway, so long story short, we do the whole record with the band, and we're like, oh, well, we're gonna use the band versions are 10 times better than the two of us. But it's a different thing. Because before that, when it's just me and Kyle, it's like two dudes against the world.
Right.
It shouldn't work, but it works anyway. So that had a charm that maybe was lost, but sonically it was just so fun to hear those songs all exploded out with a full thing.
I know what you mean. Like Batman and Robin with the Greek chorus.
Yeah.
Gets in the way. Gets a little messy.
So, yeah.
But Rod, you liked what it did on the record.
I love the way it turned out, yeah.
And that's bitching that you went in there 90% convinced the other way, and then shine.
We let ourselves be, swept up in the moment.
Look, we're at the end of the hour two, December 10, 2015, Dish Watt Pedro Show, hold tight for hour three. December 10, 2015, it's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
Thank you. Okay, these guys are very, very bossy.
Vor Liebe. die Wolken heut nach Norden gehen. Ach, lass die Welt nicht meine Tränen sehen. Leg deinen Kopf in meinen runden Schoß. Hierhin, in meinen Schoß. Bleib heut bei mir, denn der Sonnenschein wird fürchterlich. Mein armes Tier, für die Luft ist noch so morgenfrisch. Du bist das Schönste auf der Welt für mich. Sollen dein Herz verstehen. Keine Jungfrau mit dir baden gehen. Schau her, mein Haar ist licht und klar. Alhamdulillah. Aus meinem Lager zur Nachtzeit rufe ich ihn, den meine Seele liebt. Ich suchte ihn und ich fand ihn nicht. Aufstehen bin ich denn. Wer die Stadt durchstreifen, will ihn suchen, den meine Seele liebt. Es fanden mich die Wächter, die die Stadt durchstreiften. Habt ihr ihn gesehen, den meine Seele liebt? Kaum war ich an ihm vorüber, da fand ich ihn, den meine Seele liebt. Ich ergriff ihn und ich ließ ihn nicht mehr los. Ich beschwöre euch, Töchter Jerusalems, bei den Gazellen und den Hirschkühen des Feldes. Weckt nicht, stört nicht die Liebe, ehe es ihr selbst gefällt.
Joined the Merchant Marine. A 2-year hitch is a long, long time, but lunch on a tray, including milk and carrot spears, can sure be mighty tempting. All my knives are blunt, which doesn't mean they're limp, it means they're blunt. Everybody's got a friend, and I've got 7 friends besides myself, and this is true. I almost spoke to M.T. Kinney. For the second time, I almost talked to M.T. Kinney. And once, believe it, I actually did.
Watt from Pedro Show. Start off the third hour with Just an Ordinary Dave, Basho, Smitten, David Nusselhoff, Tuggy with Cuddle Up a Dud, and finally Kimbaum and Kestner with Weck nicht die Liebe. This might be not the most fucking deep question, but there's a difference between the acting and the music.
Well, yeah. Music is a better job. It's a more fun.
Okay.
I mean, you
wow.
Get to see the world.
Yeah.
You get to, you know, get up in front of a huge crowd and play music, you know,
yeah,
that you love, and the audience performer relationship is more satisfying, because a movie, you go, first of all, you got to wake up at 5 a.m, go get makeup and costumes that sometimes make you feel ridiculous, and then
only sometimes
work like a, no, sometimes you look cool.
Okay.
And then you'll like do the acting up in front of the camera that sometimes is fun, but a lot of times it's just sort of like nerve-wracking because you're like, oh, I'm not a good actor, and that, whatever. But you'll work for like 12, 13, sometimes more hours, and then you go back, and you really got to go straight to sleep because you're going to have to wake up again tomorrow. The schedule is just more of a grind.
What about the middle theater?
Theater is the hybrid. I mean, that's a great thing. It's a great thing, but I haven't really been doing my theater because I get my theater kind of kick from the band.
But you started with the actor people.
That is where I started. Yeah, it started out with theater. And also in high school, I did a lot of theater. So, yeah, that's my roots.
So what were some of the favorite acting gigs? What were some of the
favorite acting gigs?
Some of the more fun ones.
Well, it always comes back to School of Rock. I mean, that was like the one where I felt like all the planets aligned for me. It was very much what I was about. And I had this amazing friend, Mike White, who wrote, not to be confused, Mike Watt. It's very close. But
different moms.
Yeah. But similar creativity. This guy was just, you know, he wrote the script for me, and that has never been done before, not since either. But when you get a collaborator who's really talented that is like taps into what I'm good at, then that was just like, that's felt like at the time and still feels like my tombstone gig, you know, that I'm proud of and it's there. Yeah, it's my signature gig. And even though it's like a kid's, like a genre movie, it feels like, it's my best work. And just, so that's that one. But I also love doing Nacho Libre. That was really fun. I went down to Mexico, and that guy, Jared Hess, is an amazingly funny human being and really just an incredible guy. All the voices are his, you know. He's an incredible actor, but he'll never get up in front of the camera. But behind the camera, you know, he'll come up and say, maybe you should say it like, you know, let me borrow some sweats.
Okay, that's an element that's different music. Or maybe with making the record, like you said with the Chemical Cats.
Yeah.
They're kind of like directors.
The Dust. Did I say the Chemical Brothers? I meant the Dust Brothers.
I think you said Dust,
well, there's Chemical Brothers. They're not to be confused with the Dust Brothers.
Oh, that's right.
But anyway, yeah, the Chemical
Those
Cats.
Those guys are England, right?
Yeah.
And there's sweaters and dancing and... But the guys with machines and sweaters.
Those guys originally wanted to be called the Dust Brothers, but they couldn't because the Dust Brothers were already there. So they had to go with the Chemical Brothers. That was their secondary choice of name.
So I got onto that by accident.
You actually tapped into something. Yeah.
Okay, but so a director, when you're acting, like not the theater, but
yeah,
when the theater, that's all taken care of in practice, right?
Yeah.
Because when in the old days, was there a little thing? Wasn't there a cat down in the deck?
Whispering lines?
Oh, that's what that was for. Like, yeah. He spaced on lines.
Yeah, well...
So he wasn't really directing. That's all handled at the practice.
That's all done in rehearsal, yeah. I mean, and the guy, the director, I mean, that's more of a musical theater thing in the pit. If there's a conductor who'll looking up to, but
leading a band. No, I'm talking about some dude.
Some dude who's like...
He's a little... That the audience can't see him.
Well, there's a dude down there with the script following along, just in case. You never know. Okay. Yeah, someone's
got... But he's not directing. He's just to help out on Space Outs.
He's just, in Space Outs, you might hear a whisper if you listen real closely.
Wow.
But I never called for line in the middle of a play. God forbid. That I hope that never happens.
Because it's live. Now, what about when people are shooting with a camera? Do some people work with things in their ears?
Yeah, well, you know the best. The one who started, who invented that technique... was Marlon Brando.
Well, I was going to say that somewhere I heard he had a reputation for not
knowing his lines. But he's also, you know, the greatest actor who ever lived. So you got to wonder, was that because he was so, you know, in the moment emotionally, he didn't want to, like, have to, like, think about lines? I don't believe he was lazy, you know. I saw this amazing documentary called Listen to Me, Marlon.
I've heard about this.
Oh, dude, you got to see it.
It's him talking... For himself.
Yeah. Just a revelation. For any actor should watch that.
I heard the end of the Apocalypse Now. Yeah. It had no ending. And he had to manhandle that motherfucker.
Yeah.
He gave him a bowl of water.
Yeah.
And he figured out wash the head.
Yeah. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
Wash your head and the horror and all that.
Yeah.
Ad lib.
Yeah.
You spend all this money, you go to the Philippines, you don't have an ending?
Yeah. Well, you know,
there's a movie about the movie, right? They're all choked out. One dude has a heart attack.
Yeah. Yeah, Sheen.
But you had a comedy movie that kind of made fun of some of that.
Yeah.
The dude and the character.
Yes.
400 years.
Yeah. Well, the.
Who was that? Iron Man guy.
Robert Downey Jr. in Tropic Thunder. What an amazing performance that was.
That movie kind of didn't have an ending either. But
no.
That was great.
But there were some righteously funny parts.
Incredible. Yeah, Ben Stiller, man.
Okay, so something like that. What's the director's just hoping to capture something? He's not really setting it up.
Yeah.
You know what? The whole movie thing seems like such a collaborative effort compared to the music. I mean, you got your bro there. But how many dudes involved with a movie, or even theater? It's an ensemble, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it comes down to what kind of director's at the helm. Some directors, like Richard Linklater, real collaborative and real.
He's like Austin guy, right?
Yeah, Austin, Texas. He did a School of Rock, and
he did that too.
Yeah, wow. But he approaches it kind of like a play, where he'll rehearse the scenes with the actors weeks in advance and find things that don't sound right, and you know, because each actor's approach to the material is going to be slightly different. Absolutely. So he'll finesse and find that place and
instead of trying to force the dude into the part, put the part around the dude.
Exactly, and find the truth in the scene, and he's all about grounded, real, and other directors will be much more about their vision and getting everyone to get on their page, and sometimes that's great, and sometimes I think for the most part I prefer the Linklater approach, where it's a collaboration. It's a lot more fun, it's a lot more satisfying creatively for the whole group.
I've heard that there's kind of a different style director coming in. The guys who do commercials are being used to make movies now. And there never was a tradition of that before.
Yeah. Sure.
What you're talking about, the focus, get on the same page.
Yeah. I mean,
what do you think about somebody who films more than one ending?
That happens, you know, but
I hear that happens a lot.
You gotta be open to that kind of stuff though, because sometimes that's where the best stuff happens is after you're done.
Come in and decide.
Oh, well, that's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
When you're going by market research and that's how some bad stuff is made. But watching a movie with an audience is a useful tool at times, you know.
Did they do that in the old days? It was just rolling the dice, right?
I don't think so, yeah. I think that's a relatively new phenomenon, but I don't know when the first reshoot was. That'd be an interesting thing to Wikipedia. I bet that they don't even know it, even in the Wikipedias.
Wow. But for you, you like to collaborate.
I do. I mean, that's...
It might be because you were in a band, though. You're a hands-on dude.
Yeah.
You're not like kind of a hand puppet.
George,
if you saw somebody picking their ass, you call them hand puppets. You're your own hand puppet.
Yeah.
But, and I think, that, you know, once you have that experience, running your own boat, going on your tours, it's kind of hard maybe to let go.
It's true.
And I can empathize. Let's listen to the last music.
Wait a second.
Takes a little faith, the mix gets hot. Micro- rogue and his pride. Too small to see, chewing on the leaf, week after week, time goes. If you're doing it right, it's gonna get real high. Wet, green, dry, brown, take a sick and mix around. Cut the grounds, eggshells, dry leaves, corn husks, turn it in soil. Your garden's gonna grow flowers and tomatoes and melons in the summer. And the feeling that you get when your crop is a bumper. Satisfaction.
Backstage, nuts and bolts and wires, lights and paint and cables, all these little dressing rooms, everything is exposed here. Oh, that opposite kind of exposure, so different from being on stage. You can see the dust and the pizza boxes, the backside of a set, or just pieces of it. In other words, everything that is theater is cranked up here. It's so wonderful and intense to get ready, to get an audience ready, to put everything together at once. Then it's 7:30.
I got a jar of Metamucil in the car.
I'm way into fucking fiber.
Yeah, fiber is the key. Yeah.
Every morning for what? Tastes like Tang. Remember Tang?
Yes.
Kind of orange.
Diatomaceous earth.
We just heard a compost from Earth One Ensemble. That's here in L.A. Some of the guys, Double Knot Spy Car. Joe Brewer, Jack Brewer for Zachatrus Cousin out of Madison with Behind the Theater, his poem. And finally, Blind Idiot God with Antiquity. One time, I think Minuteman, or I played with these guys years ago, and I get this email. Look, they got that together after 30 years, and they're making an album, and why don't you write a blurb for them? They played with you once. I felt so ashamed. I couldn't help him out. I had to make up the whole fucking thing. I couldn't. So, okay, so with your help and want to understand the difference between being in a band, doing theater, and doing movies.
Prac and rehearsal. Difference between track and
rehearsal. Yeah, I'm heavy on that semantic.
Yeah.
I've yet to hear a basketball player say, I'm going to go rehearse. But music people... It's just somehow they practice like two little boy or two like child. They got to bring in that. So they get a little touchy, a little pretty.
Yeah.
Brother man. What about the difference between TV and movie? Is there a difference there?
Speed. Usually like TV will be moving at a faster pace. Oh, okay. But not so much a difference when it comes to independent film. Because you do a little movie, like I did a little movie called Bernie, yeah. And we shot that out in Austin, Texas, and we only had 4 weeks, and that's a very short amount of time, because usually you have 12 weeks to make a full-length feature. Yeah, but when that's when you got a full budget, you know, like $25, $30 million.
What about Bogey in those days? How long
Bogey, good question. I should know that. I should be a real student of the history of film. I do not know how long
Here's
they
one
did.
Thing I know
My
about
guess
him.
Is faster.
He was the first, you know, there was this thing called the Sable, the moguls.
Mm.
He's the first guy to bring back, because actually started, there was independent, something called United Artists with Ray Pickford and Charlie Chaplin, Doug Fairbank. And, the guy with the letters.
Yes. Oh, that guy.
They make this company, but then it goes into the moguls era. But then Bogey names this company after the sailboat called Santana. And he's the first independent producer after that whole, like, maybe 30 years of the Stable system.
Mm.
And it kind of changed things forever.
Mm.
And some people say maybe things got done quicker in those days because of the boss, the focus.
Right.
And so I'm wondering about, because there's one thing you know, there's not a lot of editing.
Yeah.
Not a lot of quick stuff. There's not a lot of special effects.
Right.
It looked like the shot, something like M. It looks like it's shot in the same room the whole movie.
Right.
And so nowadays, yeah, I didn't realize 3 months though. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
is that getting ready for it, or is that the actual just doing it?
Like, I bet you David Lean had time to make those movies, like The Bridge Over the River Kwai,
yeah.
or
where you went to a location.
Lawrence of Arabia, that had to take 3 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's no lot. That's no bad.
Yeah, that's probably when they started really taking time, when David Lean came to town, when he entered the equation. But
there was some kind of hint at that, because that DeMille guy, he built the big...
That's the two-letters guy, right?
No.
Cecil B.? No, that's not letters. So that doesn't matter. I can't believe I brought it back to the guy we can't remember. D.H. Long!
I
know
the plan come back.
Yeah,
like,
oh, man.
It's supposedly a good movie, but...
Right. But who can watch it?
I know.
Yeah.
You know, I was on tour with the Italian guys about a year and a half. No, it was last year. And we're in Cleveland, and the cat we're gawking at is Pat Demos. He brings out this VHS tape that's still in the shrink wrap.
Mm.
He goes, why won't anybody watch this with me? It was Salo. 100 Days of
Sodom. Oh, my God.
No one will watch this with me. People like eating Stronzos and shit. Oh, I can't remember that fucker's name. But
me neither.
We're going to move past it. So that's the difference. It's the quickness. You got to get it right for TV. Quick.
TV, yeah, you don't have a lot of takes, and you don't have time to mess around. They stay on a super tight schedule, so, you know, there's a lot of times when
you get the lines right, but you didn't get the emotion right. But hey, no time. Keep moving. Wow. All right. Okay. Just let it go. Because if you let it eat you up, you'll be like, oh, I should have done this or that. You got to learn how to move to the next. Focus on the next thing.
Wow.
But there's so much good TV right now. I feel like I'm more interested in my favorite shows than I am in movies that are coming out. I think just because the demand is higher, people don't want to go out to the movie theaters as much. Maybe there's just more attention paid to that, you know. And once you had like a Sopranos or a show that good on television, it's like a great bait for the other artists, the directors and the writers and the actors that want to do something like that.
Okay.
And that long form is very seductive because, you know, Tony Soprano is a character that, that went much deeper in many ways than the Godfather was able to, just because of the span of time.
Right, right.
When you can cover,
you have to make one picture.
Yeah, why make a 2-hour movie if you can make a 20 or 30 hour movie where you can really go deep? It's a whole different animal.
The third one was kind of lame.
Yeah, the the third season of Sopranos.
No, Godfather.
Oh, the third Godfather. Yeah.
He had to pay bills or something. I don't even think he liked it.
Yeah, no.
Mr. Copeland.
No, nobody liked that.
The thing is, it seems with the movies, there's got to be a lot of, like you're saying, 3 months, a lot of money's riding on these things.
Yeah.
So maybe you can't take as much chances.
It's true. There's a lot of notes usually that'll come down from on high. From the studio executives.
But with Barney, you probably didn't have to worry about that.
No, none of it. We didn't get one note. But I know that Rick was stressing every day. Was like, oh, I don't know if we're gonna get the day. We gotta get all these shots. And he was in a little bit of a personal hell. I was having fun because it's more fun to act in a movie where every day is like a mountain. You just come home exhausted, but in a good way. You come out home
sure tired.
Yeah, tired from like a good day's work, and it can be really fun and satisfying. But
back to the Dean Kyle.
Yeah,
you did more tours.
Yeah, well, then once we had an album, then we got to go on like a real tour and do because the other touring we did was just me and Kyle.
Yeah.
And now, once we had this album, we're like, let's go out with a band, you know? And
back to the record here.
Yeah, and we had a great time on those early tours. And then when we did that movie, The Pick of Destiny, we had like a full set. It was like a Broadway play almost, where there was a concept there, because we were like, how are we going to introduce the band? That's when we started with a band live, after Pick of Destiny. How are we going to introduce the concept of Tenacious D with a band? Because we've never done that before. And we felt it was important to, like, show the audience the way in. And so we started off the show with just Kyle's living room, recreation of his apartment that we used to jam in when he was teaching me guitar.
Wow.
So we have this thing. There's the power couch. There's the posters on the wall. There's the kitchen. It's like, this is Kyle's living room.
Yeah.
And but no Tenacious D.
Dish.
Where's Tenacious D? Yeah. The lights come up. The curtain goes up. It's like you're watching a play. Yeah. And the crowd goes, and then they go, huh? What? Is there a show going on here? And then you realize that me and Kyle are underneath this blanket, snoozing, power snoozing, both of us on the couch. And then we look out of the blanket, and then we go, oh, shit, we got a show to do. And so we come out of the blanket, come off of the couch, and go get our guitars and start the show. And it's just me and Kyle for a few songs. And then someone spills a beer, and it goes onto the electrical equipment, and then we get fried. And we go to hell. So then there's a stage change. The set changes to hell. And in hell, we're like, what's going on here? And first we see this guy that looks like Jesus Christ. We're like, oh, my God, Jesus Christ, what are you doing here? This is hell. Is that? No, I'm the Antichrist. I get that all the time, though. We look the same. And we're like, oh, all right. We couldn't help but notice you were playing a mean guitar. Do you want to play guitar in our band? It's like, yeah, sure. And then so that's how we got our electric guitar play. And we built a band that way. I was like, Charlie Chaplin, what are you doing here? You're one of the greatest actors of all time. I'm gay. Oh, that's why you're in hell. God. Okay, so he's in the band. And then, wait a second,
the guy from Kentucky Fried Chicken, Colonel Sanders, why are you here? I killed over a billion chickens. Oh, so you're in hell. Got it. So then we'd form the bands, and then we start the show with the full band. But it was a high concept thing, and it was so much fun, the theatrical aspect. You know, my theater roots and Kyle's theater roots really came into play.
Sure.
Because it was half acting and half music, you know. And it was a fun time. But even though no one went to the movie, we still had like a good crowd for the live show.
Because you toured around the movie.
Yeah.
Okay. We did. With a band.
Yeah.
It's different touring with a band than with just the dynamic duo.
Yeah, but we got lucky because these guys were just great people that we loved hanging out with. That was a fun tour bus, you know. We got into, like, the drive between shows was just as fun as the shows for me because we got games going. We had this weird game where, you know, nowadays the tour buses have these things, these hard drives that have, like, a ton of movies on them, but they just downloaded them for free off the internet, BitTorrent style. So they're all crappy movies that no one's ever seen before. So we'll go alphabetical. We'll start at A, and it'll be Arankas Magaivash. And I was like, has anyone seen this? And you go until no one's seen one, Arankas Magaivash, let's watch it. And then you watch, and there were seven of us on the bus, including like crew and everything. And so it was four gongs. You had to have more than half of us say gong it, and then on to the next. And sometimes you could tell in the credits, gong. But then there'd
you mean
be
the opening credits.
Yeah, but then we'd be watching. So there's three gongs now. Who's gonna do the next gong? It was so fun. And then a little booby ungong. There's only two gongs now.
And then it would go.
But we never watched a whole movie. Never in all those dates, all those drives. And it was so funny and fun, man. And yeah, I couldn't imagine doing it if I didn't like the people that I was on the road with. But sure. I hear about bands, great bands, that are just filled with turmoil and hatred. And it's like,
drama.
But they do it. But I wouldn't want to do it.
Hard shift to pull.
Yeah.
What about the next Tenacious D plan?
So we got a bunch of projects in our head. We got a cartoon we want to make, kind of a post-apocalyptic cartoon with me and Kyle. Yeah, but like fun and somehow.
Like The Road.
Well, like, you know, Road Warrior. You ever see Road Warrior? That's a pretty fun movie. But it's post-apocalyptic. How come we're having so much
McCarthy
fun?
Thing, because I liked his cowboy books. Now
that's a real serious one. That's no fun.
Oh, God.
It's not going to be like that.
That was a bleak motherfucker. Yeah. Pushing a shopping cart around.
Oh, my God.
Trying to get to Mobile.
The survival. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, but a cartoon
okay.
Where we'll make some songs and do like a, you know, like the Beatles did with the Yellow Submarine.
Oh, something like is it true that they went their own voices?
That's what I heard.
Yeah, somebody told me that. They got dudes to play their
voices.
Well,
we're going to do our own voices, so maybe not so much. Yeah.
But fake voices?
That's not right. There was also an amazing thing. We wanted to do I can't tell you. Okay. This is a secret. We have another high concept, but we're super paranoid that someone will... I'll tell you once the microphones go off. But we've got a concept for the album. And
another album's coming.
Another album.
You gave me here a live record.
Yeah.
The live records are usually that kind of holding pattern.
Exactly. Right? That is our holding pattern.
That's your holding pattern.
But, yeah, so the cartoon, next album. Oh, and also we do this festival every year, comedy music festival, called Festival Supreme, every October. And I want to get that El Mariachi Metallica band you were talking
Metalachi.
About. Metalachi is perfect. We got to get Metalachi.
What town do you do this in?
We do it in L.A. We do it over at the Shrine Auditorium.
Shrine, that's right.
Downtown,
Shrine Auditorium.
And grounds in the Expo Hall. We use the whole space, and it'll be next October something or other. I don't know yet. It's too early to say. But we've been having so much fun with that because...
you put on a big festival with like 20 or 30 bands and comedians. It's a lot like throwing a party. You know, you call people, hey, you're going to be in the thing, you're going to be in the thing. And you build up this thing that you would want to go see.
Yeah, yeah.
And then just see how it goes. We're not going to be in the festival. You know, we're not going to play it this year. We're just going to, like,
curate.
It's fun. Have you ever curated? Have you ever curated?
Wonder if I have.
You know you have, and you just don't remember.
Do some old tomorrow's parties.
Hey, can I tell you something? Yeah. I was thinking, I wanted to say, on my drive over here, I was thinking about it, and interesting fun fact, before I got with Kyle and Tenacious D, when I was in high school, there was this amazing bass player named Sean Wheatley, and he had a band called Mustard, and... And I just loved
Josh Dunnett.
Yeah, and
that's
I
heard of those guys.
I loved Mustard, and Sean Wheatley was the best, and yeah, Daryl Goldfarb on guitar, and I wanted to be in his world, so I would ask him, you know, what he's listening to and what kind of music were his influences, and he said, "Oh, you got to hear Firehose. You got to hear this album, Firehose, Raging Full On." And I went over to his house and we listened, and he said, and this is the magical thing. He had the vinyl, and he was just like, needle drop it anywhere. And I was like, all right, anywhere? Why not at the beginning? You can put it at the beginning, but put it anywhere. And I just put it, like, anywhere, right in the middle of a song. He says, see? And it was just like, great. No matter where you put the needle, the music was great. And I thought that was such a funny way to judge an album. And it was true, you know? When it's packed like that.
This is the Treacherous Jaywalker days.
Yes.
So I had just worked with Josh and his
Yes.
guys. They were teenagers. Still.
Yeah. No, but I went to Crossroads for my 11th and 12th grade and we were all about Firehose and the Meat Puppets but anyway, I would jam with him a little bit too. I brought my Tascam over to Sean Wheatley's house and also I should mention Steve Townsend on drums if you're listening. I didn't forget you. But we would play, and that's where the idea, I first was thinking, let's write the greatest song in the world, because we were listening to your music, and we just thought it was the greatest music in the world. And I said, let's you and me write the greatest song in the world. So me and Sean Wheatley took a really, really crappy pass, an early pass. It is, none of that song made it to the final that I did with Kyle, like full 10 years later. But... So in a way, you are to blame for Tenacious D.
Whoa.
So yeah, that's why I wanted to tell the story, because it all really comes full circle, and that's why I was so excited to be in the Mike Watt Show.
Oh man.
Because I could tell you how you kind of inspired me to form.
Well, damn, that's very kind.
Righteous.
Me and Brother Matt very much look forward to you coming on.
Yeah.
Big time. And I think for the listeners out there. You know, everybody's got their own journey. This whole self-expression thing, you know, be it poems or painting or theater or bass or acoustic guitar with your buddy. I just think it's great human fabric to connect us. But, you know, there's some trips about it. What if a younger guy asked you advice?
I always tell him to write because I was searching around for stuff early on, you know, acting in plays and acting in TV commercials or movies and television, everything. But it wasn't until I got with Kyle and really started to write music, write songs, write skits, that I found my own voice. Because it's so competitive out there. But not just that. But if you're just waiting around for someone to put you into their thing...
Yeah.
You could be waiting around forever. It could never happen. You
gotta go by
and make
wheel.
A thing. Make the thing you want to. You like
make it happen.
Do a little work. Think about. Wait. You want to sing. You want to. Well, what kinds of songs do you want to sing? You know. Yeah. Let's get specific. Get down to what really is what you want to do, and then just start doing it. And get with. You know. Find your Kyle. If you can find your Kyle Gass, it's very helpful.
Yeah.
Find a sensei and just start writing.
Yeah, I could attest to that. There's something when you have some cat.
Well, actually, the energy, too, from Tenacious D.
Sure. Because
it's like that was a big breakthrough for me. It's like, oh, okay, you know, writing that first song and getting up in front of the crowd. And then the next movie I did after that, I took all the energy that I had from those early live performances and brought it to the next character. It was a little movie, High Fidelity. And it was my first really good role.
Oh, shit.
And I was able to, like...
You know what? I know about this because Double Nickels and the Dimes in it.
Yes. Okay, yeah.
Somebody's stealing records.
Yeah. You know...
Adam Storr, something, one of them that falls out.
I wish I could take credit for that, but you know who was the musical guru on that movie? Was there's a guy, Dan Koretsky. He's got a label out in Chicago called... Shit. It's a great label.
But it's sort of like the tree in the other movie
with the branches. Drag City Records.
Drag City, yeah, Chicago.
And he was the guy who was saying, let's put this and that in there. And even like the record, the album covers, you could see them all in
there. Nothing's by accident.
Nothing's by accident. But anyway.
John Cusack.
Will there be a High Fidelity 2?
Nah, I wish. I wish there would be a lot of twos.
Do you have a plan for a new movie?
I do have a thing I want to do about a polka singer.
Accordion?
Yep, I got to learn accordion. Luckily, my wife, Tanya Hayden, plays accordion. Yeah. She can do me some teaching.
Well, I know she knows cello. She knows accordion, too. Wow.
She's a jack of all trades.
Damn.
She's a Tanya of all trades.
She plays
cello. She plays accordion.
There was an accordion player that I know of called Dick Contino. He was one of the last big stars into the 50s, early 60s. Yeah. You can imagine there was guys that were like Jimi Hendrix on the fucking accordion and dressed sharp.
And I should also say that
you know, Pedro, we got a lot of ethnic, a lot of Italian Slavs.
Yeah.
My second man organ player could do accordion. Oh, yeah.
Do you have some Poles, though? Do you have some Poles doing some...
The Poles are the North Slavs. These guys are more Balkan,
okay.
Croatian.
I need a good polka club where I can go and
you know,
just
for these weddings he played.
Yeah.
He had to learn hundreds of these songs.
Wow.
Polkas, kolas.
Yeah.
They're all different forms of people dancing.
Wow.
Like your ma, that's how people got together, was dances.
Right.
Alpine Village probably got your source.
Yeah.
Alpine Village.
But I bet you Pizzo, he knows so many songs. I mean, because you have to entertain for 3, 4, 5 hours.
Yeah.
Playing these old country tunes, you know, and a lot of 2/4, a lot of oompa.
I want to also tell you, though, that there's another thing I'm developing. We got a script, but we're still working on it for Rocky. Trying to develop a Rocky Erickson film. Yeah.
Oh, Rocky!
Yeah.
Wow.
And I would jump in for the later chapter. We get some talented young kid to play his 13th floor elevator days. Yeah. But yeah, that could be a cool project too.
Bringing the mom.
Yep, that's the key.
Trippy. You know, you've seen the documentary, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty trippy, but you know, I just some especially you know, Hank put out his words. It's called Openers 2.
Oh,
it's
really?
A book. Yeah, Henry Rollins put out of all Rocky's lyrics.
I gotta get that.
Incredible lyric writer. To me, he's written some of the best rock songs. The words, "I've always been here before." Oh man, that song is like Bermuda, The Interpreter. The 13th floor. Look, he also had the voice.
Yeah,
it's this weird mix of Little Richard with Texas.
Yeah.
It's not weird. They do go together, but it's just something else, man. And I really think that'd be bitching if you could do something for him.
Yeah.
Because I don't think enough cats know.
It's true.
Hank bought him fucking false teeth.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, in our scene, you know, the punk movement, he was an important cat. Maybe not with the younger ones, they don't know as much, but he definitely was in the foundations.
Yeah.
And he took some blows. But, you know, he's a survivor, too, though.
Yeah.
Wow. Did you ever get to see him?
I did. I've seen him.
Okay.
Still playing shows.
Yeah, I know.
For a while
he wasn't, but he came back. His brother, who's a tuba player.
Yeah.
Out of Pittsburgh. I got to meet this guy.
He's got a good thing going now with his current situation with Jagar playing in the band, too. And his son,
right,
Jagar.
Son.
Yeah. And, yeah.
I haven't seen that band. When I saw him at that Game Boy stage, he had other old dudes.
Right.
But he was singing and playing. They were playing great, too, man.
I mean,
it's something else. you know, the whole idea of working the old tunes and, yeah, why don't you write something new? I don't know sometimes about that. And but it would be interesting to hear him write songs about this time. It's a strange time in some ways. What do you think about that? When you put on stuff for people, expressions, your theater, your music, do you ever want to be relevant to the times?
Of course.
Okay.
I mean,
cause we got election time coming, isn't it?
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, I'll go see Rush, the farewell show.
I heard the drummer's quitting.
Yeah, that's it.
I heard he's.
That was what he. I think that's the deal. And you know, the first half of the show, I don't know any of the songs. They're the new songs, and I'm like, gosh, I should really have done my homework. And then the second half of the show is just, you know, oh yes, 2112, and it's like, yes. So I understand when the audience needs their oldies. I'm all about. I'm a crowd pleaser. You know, I'm a showman, so yeah, sure. I'll give them what they want. But I feel like I got to sprinkle in some current events just to feel for my own personal satisfaction.
Yeah, I get that too. On the tip, what about just personal vision? Like we've talked about Mr. Wells. Like, what do you think of a guy like Orson Welles who went balls out, right? It's going to be my vision.
Right out of the gate.
Right, or it's all.
Well, you know, he was a bona fide genius, and he made the best theater and film out there at the time when he was first coming up as a kid, really.
Yeah.
And there's also lots to not like about him early on when you look at.
Even he admitted. I read books. This one place. He said, "I have an unfortunate personality."
Yeah, it's very much of a Kanye West. It's that thing that. What do you call that when you're so conceited and you're just looking in the mirror all the time?
I don't know, but there's a line in Shakespeare where this guy says, "Attend me, flatterer." And there's only one more econo thing that Shakespeare wrote that I like more. Churl. I think it's Puck in Midsummer Night's Summer Dream. Churl. Some people do windbag speech and shit. We do just churl.
Yeah.
Yeah, we lost something. We got to get back to those old English roots where you could like distill things down to one syllable.
Yeah.
But yeah, whether or not you want to make it relevant, it's still your personal vision. Do you think the artiste should stay in the pilot seat?
Well, you know, you look at Bob Dylan. You go see his shows, and you go halfway through the song, it's like, what is this new song? And then you realize. Holy crap, this is, you know, he's just singing it different.
He's got a mariachi suit up.
Yeah.
He never played guitar.
Yeah.
The organ. And a mariachi suit.
I can respect that because he's like, that's how I wrote the songs in the first place, guys. I'm just staying true to my process.
Yeah, that's right.
And so you respect it, but you gotta mix in some of the things that we love and that we know that are part of our root, that are part of our roots.
Yeah.
That's
good stuff. Jack, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
Very cool.
It was great to be here.
You know, really. It means a lot to us. Thanks so much. Good people, it's been December 10th, 2015.
Narcissism! Sorry, I just remembered the word.
Just in time.
That was one of his only flaws. Orson Welles, he was a bit of a narcissist. But you know, you take the good, you take the bad.
I'd like to shake your hand, young man, but I am busy. Everybody out there, keep your powder dry.
Yeah.